Now, clearly pharma and semiconductors, as we know by now, they're two critical exports from Ireland to the US. They were spared the so-called Liberation Day tariffs, although The Economist magazine has labelled it not Liberation Day, but Ruination Day. Either way, pharma tariffs are under active consideration, according to President Trump, who was speaking to reporters on Air Force One last night.
The pharma is going to be starting to come in, I think, at a level that you haven't really seen before. We are looking at pharma right now, pharmaceuticals, as a separate category, and we'll be announcing that sometime in the near future, not too distant future. That's under review right now.
That's under review right now. So what can we expect? How should we respond? With me now is Neil Kinnean, Associate Partner at Shea Consultants and author of a study on this turning point for Irish biopharma. Maybe just set the scene for us first, actually, Neil, because we keep hearing how important pharma is to Ireland. How important is it?
Good morning. Yes, pharma represents quite a significant portion of GDP, about 20% of GDP. There's about 80,000 people employed directly and indirectly within the sector. It also contributes upwards of $4 billion in corporate tax. And, you know, it supports a huge amount of people's livelihoods as well.
And of the pharma product produced in Ireland, I understand about 60% goes to the EU and about 40% to the US. So the impact, what can you expect or what do you fear in terms of US tariffs on that 40%?
I suppose it really depends on the level of tariffs and the permanency of the tariffs that are actually going to be put in place. Tariffs, as you know, will raise the cost of our exports into the US, makes our products less competitive, which could have a knock-on impact on sales. But tariffs, I suppose the pharma products themselves are quite inelastic. So it's,
what does that mean?
It means that if the price goes up, it doesn't necessarily impact on demand. People need
drugs. You have to have it if you have to have it.
You have to have it. Now, there could be some cheaper substitutions that people could have, but ultimately the increase in price could end up being passed on to the insurance companies and also result in higher prices for consumers.
And when we talk about the impact here, I was struck by, I think it was said at the weekend, we may lose jobs here, we may have an economic hit here. To many Americans, and we all know about the American health system, if the cost of medicines and, again, medical devices, we're looking for clarity there, if they go up, lives are on the line.
Yeah. That's for sure. I mean, the US individuals pay the highest rates for healthcare globally. They already pay about $12,500 per annum on healthcare. I think the next closest is Norway, which is about $8,500. So the costs for healthcare are already very high. A lot of households are already priced out of healthcare. So the risk to, you know, further price increases is quite significant on people.
So how should we respond?
Well, I think there's been a very measured response from government in Ireland and across the EU. We haven't been impulsive. There's been quite a coming together of the EU leaders, I think, not only since the tariffs have been announced, but since there's been a move in how the US are dealing with the war in Ukraine as well. There's a lot of work that's been done between the Draghi report, between the competitive companies report, which has existed, you know, before this, around, you know, what Europe really needs to do. And a lot of, you know, the answers lie in that. It's about, you know, closing the innovation gap. It's about decarbonisation. It's about reducing dependencies that we have within our supply chain.
Is it also about recognising maybe more clearly where we are? The Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, who's running for re-election, he spelled it out very clearly yesterday. The 80 years, the consensus, the post-World War II economic order, the principles of international trade and cooperation, that rule book has been torn up, and that is the new reality we all need to face. So given that, that has huge implications for Ireland and FDI. Obviously, pharma was a big part of that. So what do we do in terms of all of that? Because that's the real problem, isn't it? Not this short-term crisis.
Yeah, I mean, there's a requirement for the EU to come together, you know, in a concerted effort, look at our own models, look at our own supply chains, look at, you know, our dependence on the US, particularly in Ireland, where we've got, you know, such a high proportion of our jobs tied up with American multinationals. We haven't, I suppose, at a domestic level, been very successful in fostering our own indigenous industry. There's very few billion dollar
lot of startups, but is there a gap there between, and there's a lot of research going on in the universities, so where's the gap?
Well, there's a funding gap, I think, in startups actually being able to commercialise products. The cost of developing a drug is about $2 billion.
And the regulatory, I mean, it is prohibitive almost trying to get a drug to market, isn't it?
It is prohibitive in the sense that, you know, it takes a long time. It could take up to 10 years to get through clinical trials. And, you know, a lot of that's with very good reason. But there are gaps in the education, that the type of people that we need from a manufacturing perspective, from a clinical perspective. There are gaps in funding. You know, it's quite a risky investment for VCs to step in. And for the government, you know,
VCs?
To step in, venture capital companies.
All right.
And, you know, for the government as well, you know, I think governments need to do more around trying to support, you know, some of our startup companies and some of our successful businesses.
But it's not for want of, you know, nice speeches and good intentions. And, you know, commitments are made to, you know, motherhood and apple pie in this regard the whole time. Can you give us an example of a country that you think is doing things better and what we could copy from them?
Well, I think Belgium and Denmark stand out in Europe, certainly as countries that have a very vibrant indigenous life science sector. They've both had national strategies in place for a number of years. And that's effectively bringing together, you know, government, academia, associations to have a concerted approach to how they were going to grow the industry and how they're going to work together.
So they're all singing off the same hymn sheet.
Exactly. In Denmark, they have a lot of very successful large pharma companies. They have in place an enterprise model where, you know, there's...
Isn't that where the Wegovy or Ozempic or whatever comes
yes.
from? Yes, and that could certainly be something that would be of interest to the American consumer, it seems.
Certainly, yeah. But, I mean, they have, you know, they've the highest, I think, R&D spend per capita in Europe. They've got the most clinical trials per capita as well.
And they're critical, aren't they, actually, clinical trials? And there's a lot of support needs to go in around them.
There is, absolutely. You know, we've got our own very successful CROs operating on the island of Ireland. You know, Icon, a very large business, has done very well. So, you know, we have a lot of clinical jobs here. We have quite a high proportion of our graduates are STEM graduates, about 38%. Mm-hmm. But again, that's still slightly lower than Finland and some other countries that are also performing very well in that regard.
So a lot done, more to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Neil Kinnean, thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to us. Neil Kinnean there, Associate Partner with Shia